A couple of weeks ago, we looked at a psalm that said we should bless God because he blesses us. And we learned that he actually waits on high to bless us. And then we kind of drifted into the topic of what it means to wait on God. And if you haven't gotten hold of that outline, it's kind of really worth it because it's foundational for this one. Today, we want to look at waiting for Prince Charming, part of a two-part series. Could be more on Happily Ever After. So I got input from various members of the body about what their Prince Charming and their Sleeping Beauties look like, and we'll be referencing that as we look at the scriptures as well as people's lists. We'll pass them around, don't worry. So once upon a time in a land far away, there lived a princess. And she grew up reading stories about how princesses married Prince Charming. And she read this one about how a wicked witch had transformed the prince into a slimy green frog. And the frog was just waiting for a kiss from a princess so he could turn back into Prince Charming. So after waiting around for Prince Charming to show up for a while and probably concluding that he took a few wrong turns, she decided to go down to the local swamp where she spent her days and eventually years kissing frogs. And, you know, not much came out of it, except she got a bad case of warts, and she did develop a taste for flies. So, you know, she kind of thought, well, this is what life is kind of all about, and as long as Prince Charming wasn't going to show up, she might as well make the best of the situation. So she looked around and found kind of a, you know, big, handsome bullfrog, and decided to spend the rest of her life with him. Of course, she spent most of her days worrying about her lily pads slinking into the swamp, and then the bullfrog kind of found frogs a little more attractive than human princesses, and it didn't really end happily ever after. Sad, sad story. Brothers Grimm do things like this. There's another fairy tale that some of you might have heard of about another young girl who grew up who wasn't a princess, but she kind of thought she was, because she had everything that a princess had going for her, just that her luck in life was such that she wasn't born into some fabulously wealthy family that ruled over a kingdom. And she, too, was waiting for her Prince Charming. And as luck would have it, she kind of just got sidetracked and, you know, found herself in this house with a bunch of seven short guys. And, you know, it's like she kind of looked around and thought, you know, none of this is going to work out. And, you know, the next thing she knows, she's like asleep in a glass case. And, you know, finally, after years pass, over the hill rides Prince Charming. You know, he had been, you know, climbing mountains, swimming oceans, negotiating with dragons, and, you know, he did get lost, took a couple of wrong turns, because he was a guy, he never asked for directions. So it took him a few years to eventually get there, but he did. He woke her with a kiss, and they lived happily ever after. And they had seven kids, and they named them Bashful, Dopey, Grumpy, Sleepy, Sneezy, Doc, you know, I can't remember, Happy. So it's a little strange having kids named Dopey and Doc, but, you know, she was a princess and lived happily ever after. Regardless of the circumstances, it's possible for people to live happily ever after, and it's also possible for them to live unhappily ever after. As you all know, half of all marriages end in divorce, and no one goes into this thing thinking, oh, this is going to be great, we're going to get divorced and make each other's life miserable. And of those couples who manage to stay together over 20 years, I think we say this going on 29 now we're going on, only 6 out of 100 would actually rate their marriages as happy. So is happily ever after just a thing for fairy tales? Or is it a real life possibility? Well, for 6 out of 100 couples that stayed together over 20 years, it is a distinct possibility. Take some work, take some effort. And in most things in life, it actually is a lot easier if you select the right materials to build with. But, you know, sometimes you're stuck with what you got. And you can still live happily ever after if you follow some principles by the author of Marriage. Roman number one has a principle that I'd like you to think about. It's wordy, sorry, it's not catchy, but it's worth giving some thought to. Any two people committed to seeking and following Christ, commitment to do two things, to seek Christ and to follow him, who are committed to doing God's will according to his word, being spirit-led in their decisions, and daily denying themselves to serve others, can live happily ever after. You don't have to be a prince, you don't have to be a princess, you can be a couple of frogs, but you can still manage to live happily ever after if you follow the things of God's will, led by the Spirit, deny yourself and live happily ever after. And the reason you can do that is because in order to follow those things, you have to be experiencing God's grace. God's grace will meet your needs, so you're free to love each other truly, rather than using each other to meet your needs. Another scary thought to keep in mind is, God is just. You're going to reap what you sow. If you grow up seeking to be a princess, you're fit for a prince. If you grow up seeking to be a frog, you're not going to be a princess. God is not going to entrust a prince to a witch, nor will he entrust a princess to a frog. You need to kind of be the spouse that you will be suited for. We'll talk more about that later. Number two, for those of you who are waiting, it is better to spend a couple of extra years waiting for God to provide what he's promised, which is what's best when it's best, his perfect plan, than spend one extra day being married to a self-centered, slimy, carnal frog. Trust me on this. You know, people would not, you know, they do this all the time, but they trade long-term happiness for short-term misery all the time. A God-fearing, praiseworthy sleeping beauty puts her desires to sleep in the will of God. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later, just like Adam was asleep in the will of God when God matched him up with Eve. So they can be wakened only by a mountain climbing, ocean swimming, dragon negotiating, courtly prince charming. Now here's the problem. When emotions kick in, rational thought goes out the window. We've kind of talked about this once before. People have put together a list of what the ideal guy is like. They're committed to waiting for him. And then all of a sudden, a guy shows up and the list goes out the window. And I've seen this happen for years. I've heard about it and read about it. And then I came across some research that shows why it actually happens. They showed women pictures of their newborn and of their lover, or husband, probably more likely lover, when they were hooked up to a brain scan. And when they showed them pictures of these objects to whom they had, or people, a high emotional attachment, the rational part of their brain shut down. And the emotional part just went zoom, lit up all over the place. So the concept of love is blind is actually pretty good. But the problem is, when rational thought and wisdom go out the window, what you get is a short-circuiting of wisdom, and selfishness starts reigning, and people just start looking for what they can get, not what they can give, and you don't live happily ever after. So hopefully I'll talk a little bit about guarding your heart and emotions. If you're married and you come to the realization that you've married a frog, there's hope.
Really?
Yep. We'll just take kisses, though they help, but you know, some biblical instruction might actually work on turning the frog into a prince. I see John was wise enough to make sure Helen was home for this. So there's no expectations, and he's good. Wise move, John. All right, so let's look at Roman numeral 3, the basic biblical qualifications of your Prince Charming. Now, there's about seven of these things that I pulled together out of this scripture. And what I've done is I've integrated underneath them some of your lists. And for those of you who don't know the process, I had solicited lists from members of the body anonymously of what their ideal Prince Charming would be like. I wanted non-negotiable had to be their things. And then I also asked for, if you wanted to, you could share some of the characteristics, the wants, those kind of things. And I got an incredible wealth of information back. I got a 2-page list, and every single thing on the list is ideal. It's perfect. You know, you could take at least half these lists and, you know, send them out around the world and say, this is what a biblical Christian guy is supposed to be like. And if the guy spent his time trying to mirror those characteristics, you know, there'd be Prince Charmings jumping all over the place. Instead, we got frogs, so those lists aren't there. There's one little problem, though. I'm not saying the lists are unrealistic, but the likelihood of actually getting everything that's on your list, it's like I was thinking as I read through these, you know, the Bible does say be all things to all men. I'm sure glad it doesn't say be all things to all women. Because even trying to be all things to one woman, it's like... These lists are tough. So we'll talk a little bit about in this discussion time, well, how do you live in the reality of imperfect people? These things are a little tough. But certain things do need to be there, and a person has to be on the route to being there. One thing that came out loud and clear on all the lists is the person needs to have a track record, capital letters in Roman numeral 3, of wholeheartedly seeking God. It means they are seeking God, not other things, and their seeking of God is something that they don't just do on Sunday for an hour or so, but it's something they do with all their heart, all their mind, all their soul. Let me just read a few of the... I ask people to put these in order from most important to least important. For the most part, that happened. But here's one. Loves and serves God with all his being. And I also ask people to say, what this looks like? You know, how can we recognize this? It's one of the things is, before the emotions kick in, you want to be able to recognize that, yeah, this is the genuine article. Loves and serves God with all his being, which means he loves his word, which means he obeys his word, which means he would love and value me as himself. Therefore, he has to love himself and be emotionally mature, you know, blah, blah, blah. It also would mean he loves his family more than his job and other distractions. My Prince Charming whispers, godly, a believer who has shown he has a track record of trusting God. He knows the Bible well and understands its applications. While he might not apply it perfectly, he makes that his goal. My Prince Charming, higher to lower importance. His relationship with God comes first in his life. So there's a daily quiet time early in the morning. His life is noticeably under submission to authority. Mandatory qualities. My potential mate must be diligently and wholeheartedly pursuing God. Some of the characteristics that I would expect that to look like would be consistent quiet times, involved in Bible study, accountability relationships, healthy prayer life, transparent relationships, risky dependence on God. He would be a Christian believer, follower of Christ. He would have a willingness to apply the truth in his life and share it with others. He would desire to follow and obey Christ regardless of the cost. Let's see here. Wow, this is multiple pagers. 6 pages? Whoa. He would be diligent in the Word, studies the Bible regularly, memorizes Scripture often, obeys the Word in his decision-making, and can teach others to do the same. Capable of making decisions that please God. Trust and obey God in every aspect of his life. Love God more than anything or anyone. Know the Bible well. Non-negotiable. Love God. Loves God first and is following God. Has a life plan of wholehearted pursuit and commitment to knowing and obeying God's will. That would be equally committed to me. Fully committed to an objective understanding that the Bible is God's revealed word, the one and only truth, and knows that the evidence that supports Christianity's fundamentals. Also knows why other religions are not the truth and can articulate the basic differences. Submitted to God in every area of his life, we're working to get there. While living each day in order to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. It's another one. Doesn't operate out of desires to impress. Eventually gets a few of that. Knows well and is willing to develop diligently a knowledge of God's word and its application. Would love for him to dance and has good taste in clothes. So, well, you know, most of them had knowing about God up top, so, you know, those are kind of cool. So, basic biblical qualifications is a track record of wholeheartedly seeking God. This is really, really important because if you look at what a wife is supposed to do vis-a-vis her husband, one of the things she has to do is submit to him and follow his leadership. So you need to be darn sure that you know where he's going and that he knows where he's going. And he's not just saying, oh, I want to do this, but that I'm doing this. It's not just a desire, it's fleshed out in reality. Under Roman numeral 3, his track record, a little thing, he's a coach, not a commandant. He's someone who's seeking after God and trying to help you do the same. He's not someone who is just going to order people around. So, Roman numeral 3a. He's a leader to whom you can commit to submit. He's following Christ. He's got purpose and objectives for his life, and he's taking steps to fulfill them. Ephesians 5:22 gives a biblical requirement. Wives, line up under your husband's authority. Submit to your own husbands as if you're doing the Lord. I think a wonderful marriage proposal, although I didn't use this and I don't think anybody really would, is, would you like to follow me as I follow Christ? And that's kind of really, in essence, what's being said. I'm following after God with all my heart, mind, soul, and strength, and I'd like you to join me. One of the requirements of a person being a leader is that they can lead themselves. Their life is not just one where they're just kind of drifting around, whatever happens, but they're actually proactively heading somewhere with their life, and then they can ask someone to appropriately follow. So putting together all the other stuff on your wish list and some other things from my reading experience, the guy is sound-minded, his life is governed by objective, he's wise, his life is in line with the Proverbs, he's on elder track, he's having a quiet time, he's doing Bible study. Some of you actually specified exegetical Bible study. This is a pretty high goal, but it's actually a wise one that the guy is willing to learn that. Because unless you learn how to study the Bible exegetically, you really cannot know what it says. You're just sifting through others' opinions. So eventually the guy would need to be, you know, looking at the scriptures and fitting them into the author's original intent. Otherwise, it's like, oh, I read this book, and it says this is the Christian life. And I read this book, oh, it says this is the Christian life. And those are two different things. And the only way you can reconcile them is by being able to do exegetical Bible study. So Bible study and scripture memory are priorities, and he's good at them. Some people wanted some proficiency there. It's just wise. I mean, you don't want the guy to say, oh, I want to be good at it. And it's like, you know, oh, I memorize one verse a year. He knows his purpose, which is to glorify God, love others, and make disciples, and is committed to his purpose regardless of the cost, and demonstrates that commitment. It's not just, you know, oh, I want to be. It's an is. He's accountable and submitted to a local church. I think that's kind of crucial. You think about, ladies, you're supposed to submit to this guy, and who knows what's going to happen in the future. If marriage is supposed to be for life, and you know, you want to make sure that this guy is not going to go off track, because anybody can be deceived. What's going to keep him on track? You? His love for you will cause him to forgo everything else? Well, you might think so, but that's not the reality. That's the fairy tales. You want a guy who is accountable to other men, who is submitted to a local body, so that if he's being a jerk, someone else beside you can say, hey, dummy, you're being a jerk. Well, maybe in a little more loving manner, but if it gets to that, they'll say that to protect you. Most of you wanted a guy who gets input but is not afraid to make tough decisions. I found it interesting. You want this guy to do a balancing act, and I think that's wise. You know, I want him to be a leader, but I want him to be, you know, get input. You know, I want him to be tough and firm, but I want him to be gentle. And it's actually, that's kind of correct. Aristotle said wisdom was the golden mean between two different characteristics. And that's really accurate. A guy can't just be all one or all the other. You want him to kind of be in the middle of most things. So, let's see, gets input. He's not afraid to make tough decisions. I was impressed by the number of you ladies who actually wanted a guy who was a guy. You know, didn't want a guy who was a wimp. You wanted a guy who was wise and loving, but strong and tough. You didn't want a guy who was double-minded or wishy-washy. You wanted a guy who was prayerfully seeking the will of God, to determine from the Word, input from others, logic, and the leading of the Holy Spirit, on all issues, including garbage, laundry, and dishes. You know, taking out the laundry, I mean, the garbage, is actually a will of God issue. I have a friend that I knew from college who got married. And, you know, we kind of lost track a little bit after college, and I ran into him 5 or 6 years later. And asked him how things were going, and he got married, and he said, well, you know, not too good. She's always on my case to take out the garbage. You know, and it's like, duh, guy, why aren't you taking out the garbage? You know, it's like, maybe it's the will of God for you to do that. Why didn't you consider that? similarly, you know, someone said, you know, I want a guy who doesn't who knows how to turn on the dishwasher and the washing machine. This is kind of a good thing, that the guy can actually, as a self-sufficient human being, and can pick up the slack or you know, pull the whole load when the time comes. There's going to come a time in your life when you get kids where you're going to be incapacitated. What's the guy going to do? Well, come on, honey, I'm home. You know, make me dinner. So, you know, the guy needs to learn how to do those things. A guy who has convictions because he's rigorously studied the scriptures to form them. He's not like the infant in Ephesians 4 who's tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine. You know, he knows what the Bible says about things like reward, sanctification, and he's got a biblical perspective on life. Some others that came up, he's dealt with his demons, has an exemplary but not necessarily perfect walk with God. He's respected by others, and this last one I really like, he's worthy of my submission. You do not want a guy that you think, oh, well, he'll do. If you view yourself as a princess and you've worked to become princess, you can get into princess shape, we'll talk about that next week, then you want a guy who is worthy of your submission. Worthy of you. Because you're committing to follow him all the days of your life. He needs to be worthy of that commitment. Do not settle for second best. Do not spend extra years with a frog. It's just not worth it. There's some pressure that people feel to get married. As they start hitting their 30s, they start hearing an article that was written in 1986. Popular report was published in Newsweek. You can go find it online. And it was done by professors at Yale and Harvard or Princeton. And it said that a woman's chance of being married significantly decreased after she hit 30. By the time she hit 35, she had only a 5% chance of being married. And by the time she hit 40, they said the percentage was so low she'd have a better chance of being killed by a terrorist. That was the line that made the article famous. It was a joke by the authors, but a lot of women took it as, it was pre-9/11, so you know, like the chance of getting killed by a terrorist was so bad. All right, well, 20 years later, last June, they revisited the subject. And they found that things weren't as bleak as the subject predicted, because the subject had, the studiers, researchers had looked at the past trends and projected them into the future. But things changed, because the past trend used to be with baby boomers that there was this larger number of people, and older men tended to marry single girls, and there weren't enough guys to go around. Then the baby boom has actually ended, and the trend is that there are more and more guys to go around and fewer single women. In fact, if you're in China, you know, there's a real shortage of women over there. And the research Wait, where'd all single women go? One of the studies now, if you were born between 60 and 64, you have a 97.4% chance of being married. That's actually pretty good. And they went through this study of, they had 14 single women in the Profile in 1986 article, and all but three of them were now married, to some extent happily ever after, the ones that they thought would not be married back in the previous study. Of the people who were not married, there were three. One had just adopted a kid when she was 50 and was, you know, now a grandmother and was living happily ever after with a circle of friends. One was a single black female college president that just said, you know, there's just nobody in my sphere that I would be compatible with. But I have a great wife, great groups of friends, and meaningful relationships. I can't remember what happened to the other one. But by and large, the stories turned out relatively happily ever after. This woman who said, I have this book, it's really horrible. Her guy would have to like sushi, otherwise there's no way in hell she would marry a guy who didn't like sushi. It's like, I can't find it. Here it is.
Somebody in this group.
No, not in this group. One of the women in the story, I like to experience everything in life. So if they hate sushi, I can't stand that. There's no way I would marry them. Well, she actually did manage to kind of marry a sushi eater. And is, you know, she's kind of living okay. And, well, they showed a picture of her and her kids, and she raised kids just like herself. She's miserable ever after. All right.
The new story, what's the percentage thing on the ages? It's 19,
it's 97.4% of women born between 60 and 64 will get married, and the odds continue to increase based on demographics. So it used to be the story 20 years ago was, boy, there are no guys. They're either married or married to their job or married to another guy. There are just no guys around. But, you know, the odds are improving. All right. So you want to wait for someone who is worthy of your submission. You want to wait for someone who is following after God. A lot of you wanted someone who is further advanced than you are spiritually. Good luck for some of you. We have to talk about that in the discussion time. So, Roman numeral 3b, qualification. He is a self-sacrificial, purposeful lover. He does what's in another's highest interest at the expense of his own pleasures and desires. Ephesians 5:25, right after it says, wives, submit to your husbands, says, husbands, love your wife even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. So how did Christ love the church? To the point of death. Gave up his comfort, gave up his desires, gave up his ease in heaven to come down and die for a group of ungrateful people. Husbands, that's your job. We'll talk more about that next week. No, actually, we'll talk more about that this week. You need to love as Christ loved, and that means you have to have a number of things together. First is biblical priorities. So, gals, you want to look for a guy who has biblical priorities. God's first, you'd be second, kids third, career, church, life for each other. You want a guy who's observant and he serves others' needs. He discerns God's plan to meet those needs. A guy who can express love and compassion in a way that you understand it. A guy that you can trust to seek and do what's best, who has demonstrable love, shown by investing in his life and disciple-making, willingly yields his preferences and goes out of his comfort zone to meet needs, who's hospitable, trustworthy, who's a super servant. So, you know, we talk about love here a lot, and the essence of it is your needs are met by God so that you're free to meet others' needs. In your love of others, you're not looking for your needs to get met. You're not even looking for thanks. You're not looking even for reciprocity. You're loving because it's the Christ-like thing to do. And you can love that way because you've learned to have God meet your needs. Then you can sacrifice yourself for someone else, even when they occasionally go haywire. You can still do that because you have Christ-like kind of love. It's a biblical love. And the love is not just a feeling, it's a decision to do what's in another's best interest, and that's what God's love is all about. So we've talked about that for a lot, so we don't have to do that. Come back to it unless you want to. C, it says he nourishes and cherishes others. He's a nurturer, not a Neanderthal. Ephesians 5:28-29 says, so husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. And then verse 29 goes on to say, you know, you nourish and cherish your body. You should do the same for your wife. So the Prince Charming, the biblical kind of husband, is one who would nourish and cherish others, just as he would himself. So that's going to imply he's got kind of a healthy self-love. He's kind of gotten rid of the issues from his past. And he doesn't need you to validate him. He doesn't need anyone else to validate him. He knows that God loves him because he's pleasing to God. And that's enough. And then he's free to give worth and value and nourish and cherishing to others. So what does this look like? He loves and cares for himself, part of self-love. A lot of you wanted someone who exercised but wasn't a maniac about it, who was good at some sports. You wanted one who would protect others' reputations and interests so they would protect you. You wanted someone who had good family relationships and friendships. Who would neither avoid nor initiate conflict. Another sidebar on that was knew the difference between debate and conflict. Who seeks to understand and to be affectionate, secure in his masculinity so he can demonstrate a softer side. Who would praise, appreciate, and compliment his wife. all those things go into nourishing and cherishing. The image of the Marlboro Man that's so popular in our culture is not a nourisher and cherisher. A lot of people start getting their expectations of what their dream guy is going to look like from our movies. I would suggest you not get it from our movies, but you get it from our tabloids. When you look at the lives of the rich and famous and, you know, the bright stars that are just a real mess, that's where you should start formulate what kind of guy do you really want. A lot of soaps sell the alpha male. Well, you know, if you're, you know, an animal living on the Serengeti Plain, yeah, good. Go for the alpha male, all right? You will get impregnated by him, along with a bunch of other females, and he'll go off and do his own thing, all right? There you are, all right? There's that life with the alpha male. You know, he's out there sitting under a shade tree, expects you to do the kill, the, you know, the chase down the gazelles. He'll come in and eat the lion's share of it, and you get the scraps, all right? That's life with the alpha male. Enjoy it. It's not happily ever after. So, but a lot of guys get sold that's the way you're supposed to be, and a lot of guys say that's what you want. The truth of the matter is we're not animals. We are a socialized species. We are civilized. And we look for relationships. We look for committed, monogamous relationships. And that's something that the alpha male in the, you know, survival of the species tends not to have. You know, there are a couple species that mate for life. Canadian geese are good, so, you know, maybe you look for Canada for you don't want to go to China. But by and large, you want something other than just an animal for a spouse. You want someone who can nurture, who can cherish, and stuff like that. And I'll talk a little bit later at the end about how to change the image that you have in your mind of your Prince Charming. D, he relates on social, intellectual, and emotional levels. A lot of dating just revolves around physical interaction, and they bypass all this other stuff. I read a page through the book, Dating for Dummies. It was painful, but I'd lay down my life for you guys. And the author of the book had a section, she said, I had a call-in show in San Francisco and surrounding areas, and I asked the question on the show, knowing what you know now, would you had waited before you got sexually involved the first time? And she said 94% of her callers very vigorously said yes. You know, and then the 6% that didn't know any better. But all, you know, it's almost all of them saying yes, they would have waited. And as she went on, a secular book on dating said, you know, if you get into the physical too fast, you just bypass all the other stuff that's essential for a relationship. And it just goes right to a physical plane. You're not thinking correctly, you're blinded, and you can't see things. So D has a number of implications, and I'll get to purity a little later. But D is, he relates on social, intellectual, and emotional levels, communicating, not grunting, into his commonality. The guy has to learn how to talk. He has to learn how to communicate. He has to learn how to inform and persuade, and you want a guy who's able to do that. Because in leading you, it's not, you know, do this or do that, but he really, a godly husband, will sell you on the idea. He'll explain the why. Now, unfortunately, ladies, there's going to be times when your husband will say, we have to decide this way on this, and I don't want to hear more. The input-giving time has ended. He said, but you can't make a decision, you know, unless you hear everything I have to say about it so I can have you do it my way. No. You need to kind of listen to some things I did on marriage in the past. If you are submitted to a guy you can trust, then you can trust that God will work through him to work out the best things in your life. And actually, a lot of you in your Prince Charming list came up with that thought. It shows a phenomenal amount of maturity. The reason I put this one in is because of Ephesians 5:31. It's one of the verses in that. You know, Ephesians 5 is the best chapter on marriage. It says, for this reason, this is quotes Jesus' teaching, quotes God's statement in Genesis when he created marriage, for this reason a man shall leave his mother and father, be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. If you ever heard me do a wedding thing, I kind of build it around this one. the word for joined in the Old King James is cleave. And it's used of gluing two pieces of paper together so that you can't rip them apart from each other without ripping a piece out of the other. You ever stuck stuff together with something other than rubber cement? You know how they just stick? And then if you try to separate them, it rips off. So like a piece of scotch tape on a book, and you actually try to rip it off and pieces of the pages come off. It talks about that kind of bonding. There's leaving, it's a social, legal, public declaration. There's cleaving, it's this emotional bonding that has to take place for a marriage to work. And then there's the one flush, which normally we talk about as the sexual part of marriage, which also has to take place for a marriage to work. There are other marriages that work without that. We can talk about that if you want. So this emotional, intellectual, social compatibility is something that ranked high on your list. You know, you don't want just someone, a sperm donor. You want a life partner. You don't want a paycheck. You want someone you can relate to. And that kind of came through loud and clear. And that's correct. This is a life partner. And if God created man and woman, he created them to be complementary to each other. And that showed up repeatedly. So just a few elements on this. The guy is a romantic gentleman with polite manners. And being a gentleman is a good thing. It's not just means that he's gentle, but he has a set of manners. Manners is something that was considered dispensable by most of your generation. But back in the barbaric days when civilization was just taking hold, the thing that distinguished a gentleman from a commoner was manners. And the whole idea behind manners was that he limited himself in things that might be considered offensive to others, and he was willing to buy into a code of behavior, which at times might have been silly, but it showed that he was demonstrating a willingness to live in a society that wasn't just governed by passion and desire. And that was the whole idea of courtly behavior. Second most popular book out of the Middle Ages, besides Machiavelli's The Prince, was, I forget the guy's name, one on courtly manners. And it was how to behave at court. And people who wanted to have the kinds of social relationships that were worthwhile learned the rules of the game. Similarly, a guy needs to develop manners because it shows that he is seeking to be a gentleman. And it's really hard because sometimes, I remember when I was in college back in 71, a guy was on my floor, actually we roomed together a couple years later, had held open the door for a woman and she punched him for doing it. She actually happened to know her, she was a basketball player, and she was, you know, just one of these radical feminists, and he got punched for holding open the door. This is the radical 70s, folks. But there's still a lot of people today that don't, you know, appreciate and expect guys to show manners. And some of you said, you know, even though if we don't do that, please keep treating us like ladies. We'll eventually learn. So he has a variety of interests and seeking to be all things to all men. So basically a guy who is just seeking to be a disciple and a disciple maker and be all things to all men is going to develop into a person who is, you know, got interesting, and it's going to be someone that you have fun growing old with. He's able to share what he's thinking and feeling and seeks the same. So, you know, even a guy who does more than grunts, you want him to seek what you're thinking and feeling. He edifyingly speaks the truth in love with sensitivity and discernment. This is a tough one. He is appropriately funny. Humor showed up, but it has to be funny. I mean, appropriate. Well-read and well-dressed, knowledgeable and curious about the world. I like this phrase, self-motivated to self-improvement. That really should be an objective for every person. That, you know, we want to be growing, we want to be getting better and better. You know, you don't want to be the same person that you were when you first met. You want to be growing, you want to be improving, and it makes life so much richer when it's like that. Adventurous, and most important of all, can dance. I actually threw that in on the list because it showed up on a number of your lists. But I remember going to a wedding once where there's a guy who didn't want to join in, didn't want to dance. And all the married women and the single women were trying to pull him on the dance floor. They actually got him on the dance floor. And after, you know, an intolerable, like, 30 or 40 seconds, he just ran off and, hit the bar. He couldn't stand being on the dance floor. And as I thought about why that was, he was so focused on what others thought of him, bad self-image, that he couldn't, appear to look foolish. But just think about it. He was being a complete fool by his behavior. And, you know, so dancing, being willing to make a fool of yourself, not caring what others think. If you don't know how to do that, or, you know, at least do something on there that looks acceptable, you might want to learn it. Because it's considered bravery, you know. Can slay dragons and can shake a little. All right. Yeah. Brian will give lessons if you want.
Come on, Garrett.
Alright. Let's see. E. There we are. We're up to E. He's committed to mental, emotional, I couldn't fit it in a line, and physical purity. He has his desires under control, does not defraud nor flirt. By flirting means seek attention to build self-worth. There's a fun kind of flirting which is sometimes legitimate. We talked about that. We probably won't have time in discussion another time. Shannon Britt turned me on to a site that showed up at Grove City. Someone had asked a question. He said he'd been on a site called Saving Myself for Adventuresome, Funny, and Awkward Sex on My Wedding Night. So there's a site somewhere. It's got a title like that. And the guy said he had mentioned on the site that he was saving his first kiss for his wife. And people on the site basically plastered him with negative comments. So he said, is there anybody else who feels that way? And then, you know, there were all these people were responding, yeah, that's a good idea. We're committed to doing the same thing as well. And he basically did not want emotions to get in the way of developing a relationship with his future wife. I would commend to all of you a book I haven't read. I flipped through it. Girls told me about it, called I Kissed Dating Goodbye by Josh Harris. He explains the process. He explains the motivations behind it. And if you haven't read it, it's something you need to read. Another good one, I think, by Luna Dillo is Gift Wrapped by God, that deals with this as well. Here's the biblical passage behind it. We've dealt with this a lot. This comes up every time we talk about the will of God. This is the will of God, your sanctification, that you should abstain from the sexual immorality. Each of you should know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in the passion of lust, like the Gentiles who don't know God. But it goes on to say not to defraud. And even goes so far in 1 Corinthians 7:1 says it's good for a man not to touch a woman. So there's barriers set up where the guy does not interact with women in such a way that he defrauds them into thinking that, you know, I'm going to have a relationship with you. Or he defrauds some other guy out of his future wife. And Josh talks more about that as well. A lot of you said you wanted a guy who was characterized by self-control. Not just, you know, he can demonstrate self-control, but he is characterized by it. And that is a wise choice of characteristics to have. You want a guy who sets the standard and is an example of being emotionally and physically pure, who's a one-woman man. A lot of you had that. I want him to have lots of friends with other guys, and I don't want him to have deep friendships with other women. When a guy who protects rather than leads into sin, who does not defraud, is content with God's timing, who is patient. Patience is good. The King James translation for patient is long suffering, which means self-control isn't necessarily easy. Someone who has a track record of victory, and as a result, they're going to be trustworthy. So a guy is committed to that and has a record to prove it. You know, a lot of things that I read in my research of our current culture is wives are really scared whether their husband is out of their sight. They can't trust him. They don't know what he's going to be doing. Someone said the best preparation for infidelity in marriage is promiscuity before marriage. And it's kind of true. The guy hasn't learned how to control his desires. So his wife, you know, becomes inaccessible, and, you know, the pattern that he's established in his life is, well, I have to go gratify my needs or desires any way I can. So that's why you want a guy who's committed to this and has a track record in it. E. Even if the scriptures have never said anything about this, I would put it in because so many problems in marriage, and I've done this in some of my marriage sermons, arise because of conflicts. And one of the most frequent causes of conflict is finances. So you want a guy who's able to handle the relationship financially. He can provide for his own. He has his fields ready. You know, he might just be a student, but he has a track record of diligent hard work and is going to be able to be a provider. So the wife is free to be at home with her children and raise the kids that they have. A lot of you put in they want to be able to homeschool the kids. Really tough to do that if you have to work because your husband isn't a good worker. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, if anyone does not provide for his own, especially for those of his own household, he has denied the faith. But I think the best verse on this is Proverbs 24:27. It says, prepare your work outside, make it fit for yourself in the field, and then afterward, build your house. Get your skills, get your job under your belt, and then view building a house and starting a family and getting married and all that other stuff that goes with it. I suggested to my daughters that they consider not getting married until they're 25. Just as a way to keep their mind on things, because the guy's really not ready to be married before then. And studies have shown that, and I've talked about these in the past, people, the odds of having a good marriage increase every year until you hit about 25, 26, and then they kind of plateau for a while. And so a person who is married at 25 or 6 is, you know, it's like, has a 50% greater chance of a great relationship than someone who gets married at 21. Just every year you wait during those crucial years. Because the guy is trying to figure out, well, where am I going in life? If he doesn't know where he's going, how can he ask someone to follow him? He's devoting a lot of extra time to his career. And he's putting those extra hours in so he can get ahead of the other rats in the rat race. So you want to see how his Christian commitment works out in the marketplace. You want to see, can he submit to his boss, or is he every year changing jobs because he can't get along with his employers? You want him to basically be on track, and then you can start considering, it's time for a relationship. And we'll talk about how you know that time, if we have time. Okay, so under this F, you want him to be a faithful steward of God's resources, disciplined in his spending and desires. You want to use his time and his money well, have both those things budgeted. You want him to be an energetic, persevering worker, and he can fix things. I remember one woman saying, to have 3 requirements in a husband, he had to be tall, he had to be able to handle the finances, and he had to talk to the auto mechanics. And that was it. You know, she did those things, she was happy. I don't think they're living happily ever after. You know, he's writing the checks for her credit card bills, and she's spending money because she doesn't have a relationship with him, but, you know, probably still tall, and, I don't know how the car thing's working out. One of you actually had the high thing, he likes fixing things. You know, come on. That's going a little too far. he's fun to be able to help. Or at least knows how to call a plumber or an electrician or whatever it takes. G, last but not least, he is other-centered. Well, this would follow from A. If he's following Christ, he's going to be other-centered, but I think there are a couple spots where it really warrants identifying the fact that he is other-centered, because our natural tendency from the day we were born is to be self-centered. And if we cannot get free from being self-centered, we're never going to have a good relationship. He's always going to be looking to you for, well, what can I get out of you, as opposed to, what can I give? So as you learn to follow Christ, as God meets your needs, you experience God superintending you, helping you buy or not buy plane tickets and stuff like that, you realize, oh, God meets my needs, and then you can be less concerned about your needs and more concerned about someone else's needs. Things like that happen. So he's other-centered. He knows other people's needs. He can give others honor because his worth and value come from being pleasing to God. So there's plenty of other honor to go around. This comes out of 1 Peter 3:7. It says, husbands, likewise, dwell with your wife with understanding, giving honor to the wife. Those are the jobs that's part of the job description of a husband. And you don't always see this on lists. Or if they do, they totally take the thing out of context. But part of the context is there, you're soliciting her input on stuff. So let's see how some of you put on your list. You wanted someone who's consistently humble and other-centered, who admires social graces, ability to be all things to all men, and kind of follow the things up above, who is confident and loyal, and who smells good. That showed up on a lot of your list. Young guys, that's important. You don't want to smell like boy. You want to smell good. So that's part of being other-centered. All right, so those are the basic biblical qualifications. If a guy has those, particularly the stuff in bold, you know, he's a provider, he's other-centered, he's committed to purity, he can relate, he nourishes and cherishes, he's self-sacrificial, purposeful lover, and he's a leader, you've got a great guy to go for. But what if you have this great guy that's in your circle of acquaintances and you don't feel any chemistry towards him? Chemistry showed up on a couple lists. So some list was really short. It said, he seeks after God, his wives, and his chemistry. You're easy to please. Well, chemistry. I have actually, over the years, devoted a lot of time to understanding this thing called chemistry. And it's understandable, but I don't have time to go into it all. One of these days I might do a sermon on it. But one of my big conclusions is that character trumps chemistry, because chemical reactions tend to fizzle out. And chemical reactions change because your preferences change. In fact, you can change your preferences. The stuff we talked about the past couple weeks about how you'd wipe out one image and replace it with another, you can actually do that with your Prince Charming. You get a biblical view of the guy, you make that brighter and more active in your thinking, and you take the other stuff and you kind of tone it down and dim it. I think there's actually even a better way to do it, and I wouldn't maybe have you do this for all your things, is to sacrifice him. Bury him, put him to sleep, and then God will wake you up with your Prince Charming. So you have your list, you have your basic qualifications. All the other stuff, be nice to have, pray for it, but don't obsess over it, because otherwise you're going to be going through potential mates looking for areas of incompatibility rather than areas of compatibility. And a relationship can be built by two people who are committed to following God. But some of the things that go into chemistry and compatibility is you have shared values, shared perspectives, and a shared vision. You know, it really helps if you're both headed in the same direction. You know, I could live anywhere. I really want to live in the city. You know, that's one where you want to get some compatibility on. Two people saying, I want to follow God anywhere, you're going to have an easier time than if you have a specific definite preference. God will definitely surprise you. You especially would like to find commonality in the areas where there's potential conflict or frequent impact. One of you put, you know, I wanted a person who cares more about conversation than what's on the table. But someone else would put, I want someone who cares much about food as I do. You know, so you've got the thing. That's an issue that, you know, if a guy really cares about food and the wife doesn't, or vice versa, there's going to be, you know, it's going to cause a little friction in the relationship. So it's nice to be able to find someone that does that, but pick godly over connoisseur. You know, pick godly over even conversationalist. That's the important thing. Things that frequently impact your life, you want to try to make sure you're on the same page. And last but not least, I think the most important thing is that they can sing Pizza Angel. As I was talking to my girls about what would be important for them and a guy, Pizza Angel is a VeggieTales song sung by Larry the Cucumber. And it's a takeoff on Teenage Angel, where he's looking for his cheese with tomato sauce and cheese so gooey. If you don't know the song, you should. And the reason you want to be able to sing Pizza Angel, it shows he has interest in kids. It shows he's not a, you know, doesn't take life too seriously. There's a whole bunch of stuff Shannon Brick can fill you in on the importance of being able to sing Pizza Angel for future me. So I want you, you've got this, you know, a dream guy. If you found someone with all these qualifications, would you be worthy to be paired with him? Would you be an appropriate mate for him? Would God entrust this charming prince to this so-so kind of gal? Which you'll say, no, I just want a so-so kind of guy. what I would suggest is number five, and the questions for discussion before I open it up for other questions, is you make a list of the qualities that a woman would need to have to be a complement to a guy like this. You have a guy who's really committed to knowing and understanding the scriptures. What would his wife look like? You have a guy who's committed to being self-sacrificial, loving and serving others. What would his complement look like? So, get a list for yourself, because next week I'll look at the list from a biblical perspective for ladies, what a Sleeping Beauty is supposed to look like. And you can get a head start on that. And then last, just so I make sure I hit this again, you need to learn how to put your desires to sleep in the will of God. And the best way to do that is to offer them up to God. Just like Romans 12, 1 and 2 talks about, put them on the altar. If you really want God to fulfill your promises, kill them and burn them totally, so they just totally ascend to God, the dust. And then God will reconstitute them, reconstruct them, resurrect them, need be, and give them back. This is the way God works in almost every area of life, which is why you can sacrifice all for Him, and He'll provide what's best when it comes back. Because there'll be people that walk into your life that set the emotions off, the rational shuts down, and I constantly read stories of people saying, all my girlfriends told me he was bad news. Everyone I knew in my family said he was bad news, but I just couldn't help myself. We got married, and guess what? He was bad news. And you don't want that to happen, because you want to live happily ever after. Okay, questions? I hope our food's not getting cold. Is it getting cold or stolen? All right, we're good. Yeah, Brian.
Do you think that there's a single person out there? I know it's in the culture, we say that there's one person out there for you.
So I believe that there is just one person.
And also, do you think that God actually brings two people together for marriage?
The model you have in Scripture, starting in Genesis, is Adam was asleep in the will of God. He wasn't out there, broadcasting or whatever the guy equivalent is. And God tailor-made Eve for him. And there's a ministry that Campus Crusade puts on called Christian Family Life that specializes in making so-so marriages good, good marriages better, and healing bad marriages as well. And their conclusion, Dennis Rainey, graduate from Dallas, is that there is one guy for one gal. Because I've just seen how God puts couples together. As I've observed couples, and I've observed my relationship with Jill over the past 28 years, I realize, God just tailor-made us to each other. He gave us equally horrible backgrounds and emotional deficiencies so that we could kind of grow through our problems together. It's like I think God does match up people, and I think He does bring them together. That being said, point number one still stands. Any two people can make a marriage. I think arranged marriages actually work out better than non-arranged marriages, because people come from the same values, the same, they don't have the same sources of conflict that others do. They have the social reinforcement of the marriage. And it's only in the past, as someone mentioned to me the other day, like 70 or 80 years where people kind of started choosing their own mates. And that kind of really took place in the 60s. And divorce rates have soared when people said, I know what's best. And the answer is, they really don't. Everything shows that they don't. So I think it's good to wait for God to bring the right person into your life. And He does have someone especially made for you. But not everybody in evangelical Christianity holds that opinion.
Yeah, I'm just going to say real quick that unfortunately the culture, listening to music and seeing the ad is all about getting it on with another person, and if it doesn't work out, move on to the next person. It's just really sad because the culture is so wrapped up in that.
Right. If you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. Or what about the advertisement? Wanted, young men, single and free, experience and love preferred, but will accept the young trainee. Going to put in the one ads. Anybody know that one? Well, it's a Motown hit from the 60s. I could find out which one it is.
So you really think what you just said, I mean, I don't know, I can't help it. Think differently. You just said that as soon as people start choosing their own mate, I don't know, I get the sense that it's more that divorce became acceptable. Because back to 4,000 years ago, people just didn't get divorced, or the women couldn't fend for themselves, they didn't have money, they didn't have jobs. You know, now divorce is a little bit more acceptable, and women do have jobs and money and can raise their children and live on their own. So I don't know if it's because people start choosing their mates as opposed to kind of coming out of stuff.
Well, you look at all the marriages that broke up, and you know, I studied these things pretty vociferously, and so many of them are because they chose a very incompatible person because they couldn't see what was important in a relationship. I'm not advocating arranged marriages, but some of you actually said, you know, you want the guy to pass muster by godly people that know you, because people don't know themselves. We're blind to our own faults. We really don't know what's best for us. We are finite, limited human beings. That's why God made us to fit families and bodies, because we need the other insight. So people choose really badly, and that's why this. I mean, that's one of the. Yeah, I totally agree that easy divorce increased the statistic, but why are they breaking up? Because they can't stand each other. But these are the two people who said, "You're the one." You know, and then I'm calling a lawyer.
Yeah, I mean, even arranged marriages, it wasn't because other people thought, oh, they're a great match, and oh, he's going to be underneath. It was, oh, their family has money, they're at this social level, we need to get in on this family, and it was a
There's some of that. I totally agree. But look how
like,
the human look at the human race over history. That's kind of how marriages work.
My grandparents had arranged marriage. My grandparents were. They knew each other's families, like the parents knew each other, and they were like, hey, you have a son, hey, you have a daughter, you know, and they were like, oh, they took a marriage, you know, so then they kind of arranged it, and they were young, but they had, I think, the whole point is they had support of their family, they were similar in values, they were the same religion, the same town, the same, you know, area.
It makes it easier.
There's
support,
I don't know. They
had
a
marriage on Kate and
Okay, other questions. Yeah, Kat.
Can we talk about number two? Because especially in our culture, this is a really tough list to find.
Yeah.
So how important is it that he be all of these things versus be on the road to being all of these things?
All right. What if the guy doesn't meet basic qualifications, but wants to grow and is sort of headed in the right direction, and is cute? That's the important thing to put in there. So you're interested in him, but, you know, if he wasn't cute, you really wouldn't be interested in him. But, you know, he's got this chemistry factor going in, so what do you do? I would go back to the boldface, I mean, capital letters up in Roman numeral 3. You need to have the guy get a track record. If he thinks you're worth it, and if you're worth it, he will wait for you. Jacob labored 7 years for Rachel, you know, because she was worth it. She was a woman of worth and value. And if you work on becoming a woman of worth and value, then
people don't know. I mean, she meant opposite than you, where the man that was so grown.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Yeah.
Then you will be worth waiting for, and the guy will develop those characteristics. He's not going to go look somewhere else. He'd say, you know, you don't hand him a list. That's too good. Yeah, this is a thing. I'm waiting for Prince Charming. You might want to take a look at this thing. It's on the toothpaste.net website. You know, and the guy will work towards these things. But you want him to get a track record, because how can a woman in good conscience vow to a guy, I submit to follow you, when you don't know where he's going? So you kind of want that him to be committed to that, and again, it's worth waiting, because once the guy gets married, his incentive becomes significantly less. I remember one couple that I married was down in Chinatown. The guy was tall, cute, and had a good job. Did not have much on the ball intellectually or spiritually. And the girl, you know, she was hard charging and had a lot going for her, and this was, in some cases, a catch, except this spiritual dimension like wasn't quite there. So I worked with them on toil. She really wanted to go through toil. And then I said, okay, what's your life purpose? And he said, to marry Joan. No. Okay, what happens after you marry Joan? Then what? My favorite color is mauve. You know, it's like, he just didn't have... So, you know, I actually, you know, I did premarital counseling with him and tried to get him on the right path. But, you know, the chances of living happily ever after, it's like, she got starry-eyed and, you know, it's like, So I think it's good to wait because you get to do this once. Do it right.
It's a good demonstration of him really pushing God that he's willing to
wait. Oh, yeah, definitely.
If he's not willing to wait, he's not pushing God at all.
Yeah, if the guy cannot wait, he has no relationship. He does not have a relationship with God. Like, God's grace is not sufficient for him. God is not his all in all. So, is that what you want? To be saddled with? It's wise to wait.
So just part and parcel of that, how does a woman know when that guy has sufficient track record?
Oh, boy. My basic answer to this is you cannot know the subjective will of God unless you are following the objective will of God. And if you are following the objective will of God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, you will know the subjective will of God. It's going to sound like a trick answer, but it's the reality. A person has to be knowing and doing what God requires. In that context, they will develop a sense of how God orchestrates their life, and they will know, without any emotions or physical contact involved, that this is the one for them. I knew that Jill was the one for me a year before. You know, I'm waiting on God's sermon to talk about that. If you go into A Kiss Dating Goodbye, he talks about his relationship with his wife, and they both kind of knew. So God makes it clear to you, hence the importance of cultivating a relationship with him. In fact, I think one of the things was the guy got the girl's number, and the girl was praying that he would not call. Think about that. It sounds really strange. And he prayed before he called and decided he should not call. And he did not call her. She's there singing hallelujah, but the guy didn't call that night. We have two people who are in tune with God, seeking his will. So you'll know when it's time. It's funny, in Dating for Dummies, they have like 10 signs that you are in love. Now, in love and living happily ever after are two totally different things. Falling in love is like falling into a pond. You know, it's usually a temporary condition. Being in love and loving, it's a lifelong journey. But falling into the slimy pond is a short-term thing. And one of the characteristics is if you normally spend a lot of money, you save, and if you normally save, you're spending money. You have butterflies in your stomach and you can't eat. You know, these are signs that you are in love. You hum love songs all the time. You can't stop thinking about him. You want him to meet your parents. They had five or six others that they're kind of cute, but it's like, I'd much rather have the God of the universe who knows all and has created all things guide and direct my steps towards the one that he's prepared for me. Far, far, far better than, trying to win the lottery. Just like, who knows what you get. And God will do that. If this is the most important decision of your life, don't you think God cares about it? Definitely. And if you're seeking God's will, don't you think he can get you to his will? Most definitely. Yeah, Brian.
What if you find a guy that is not mature?
What if you find a guy that is not as mature? I don't worry about this because I'm already married.
Right. What? He's going in the right direction.
Most of you wanted guys, this I found interesting, you wanted guys who were wiser, smarter, more spiritual. You wanted someone who was going to be easy to follow. You're no dummies. but you're taking an easy route out. You want to, you know, it's easy to follow someone who, you know, knows all and is always right on everything, and you know, it's like, God, they did great, never makes mistakes, but they only exist in fairy tales. So this is part and parcel of the less mature guy. You can marry a guy who is less mature than you. If you've been exposed to biblical truth and applying it for a longer period than he has, you're going to have a little tough time helping him grow. You'd like to get him around a group of guys, help him grow, that'd be great. But the reality is, ladies, you might have to nurture him. And then that becomes more difficult, because to let go of the reins on some stuff is going to be hard once you've tasted power. We can't give it up. So that's potentially a problem. We had people who used to attend Big Apple Chapel. Her father wrote the book on disciple making. He also wrote the book on how to disciple your children. So you think, okay, where is a gal with this kind of upbringing going to find a suitable mate? And it turns out God was preparing that mate for them in the jungle. God dropped this guy out of the jungle into her lap. He was the son of missionaries, had a biblical mindset, eventually became an investment banker. And they, you know, got married, and which they were living happily when they came to BAC. And you know, then they moved on. But you know, God can be preparing people that you're not even aware of that can drop into your lap, and you both recognize, oh, this is it. So it's possible.
Is there a certain list of priorities? I mean, if you can't have everything in the guy, perfect guy, are there certain things that the person should have in place, even though they're less mature?
I think the guy should have all seven of these items in place. I think they're all equally important, although I tried to put it in a little bit of priority order. The degree to which he has them in place can vary, but he should be committed to each of these things, and there should be some evidence that he's committed to them, rather than saying, oh, yeah, I'm committed. You know, now can we get married? So, I'll go for that. Yeah, correct.
So what's the difference between preparing your field and being a workaholic?
Ah.
And how can you, like, kind of engage? What's kind of the difference between someone who's putting a little more time into prepare their field and a workaholic that's going to have a tendency to continue in that direction?
Right, a workaholic neglects biblical responsibilities for a job that enhances his worth and value. Right? So he's not going to be having interactions with others. He's not going to be involved or seeking any discipling relationships. He's not going to be doing, you know, great Bible study. He's going to be putting his effort into his job, and it becomes obvious that his strokes are being received from his job. And I think every married guy here has had to make, you know, take a few hits and possible career moves in order to be a better husband and a better father. That's what you actually want. You want a guy who puts you and the family ahead of his ego enhancement at work. Although some people would be foolishly sell out, no, I just wanted to get a big bonus so I can go on vacation. Yeah, you don't want that. Yeah, Brian. Brian, are you looking for someone else?
I'm sorry. Just one quick one. Should a woman and a man before they get married get to the point in their minds that they practice exercise of saying they're, I need to be comfortable with the fact that I might be single for the rest of my life? Or should they never think that way and always be thinking, I'm ready to get married, I want to get married, I want to get married?
Thanks for asking that, Brian. That's a really good question. I addressed it in the Lord of the Ringless sermon on contentment. You need to sacrifice all your desires in following Christ, and that's a big one to sacrifice. So if you're saying, I have to be married, I have to be married, no, you need to get to the point where you are content with God. Because there's going to be times when your husband's not there. You know, just think of all the women whose husbands are in Iraq. You know, it's like they're not there. Or, you know, there's going to be times when you get widowed. You know, God is more than enough for you. And you got to get to that point where you are content. If you are discontent in your single state, trust me, you will be discontent in your married state. You know, it's just the lives I've seen, the stories I've read, it's the truth. It's just going to happen. Because The reason you're discontent is you need something other than God to make you happy. Then you get this thing, and ladies, let me clue you in. Husbands, particularly when they're not housebroken, do not make you happy. They make your life miserable. You know, it is far, far better to have a fulfilled single life than an unfulfilled married life. In fact, one woman said, a secular lady, said it's much better to be single, where are you, than married because, unhappily single than unhappily married. Here it is. Oh, the difference between being unhappily single and unhappily married is that in the first case, when you're unhappily single, one phone call can turn it around. The other takes a lot more work. Another quote, which I didn't get to work in, which I thought was kind of cute. When you look at men who don't marry, you're often looking at the bottom of the barrel. This is Berkeley sociologist Nancy, unpronounceable name. And when you look at women who don't marry, you're often looking at the cream of the crop. But I keep your standards high. Yeah. Nice one, Elaine. Very good. Yes, it is the will of God. Yes. Fiona. Question four. How do you guard your heart, emotions, and put your desires to sleep in the will of God, and what is your responsibility to search for him or her? Ooh, good question. Anybody got a good answer to that one?
Can you search and sleep at the same time?
Initially had titled the Searching for Prince Charming, then I realized, no, it's not about searching for Prince Charming, it's waiting for Prince Charming. How do you guard your hearts and emotions? Well, you purpose that you are not going to let your emotions get out of check. But just like what we talked about last week and week before that about taking every thought captive, when you start thinking the wrong way, you explode the image, you just get it out of your mind. You do not allow yourself to dwell on it because we always move in the direction of what we dwell on. So you take every thought captive, you don't allow yourself to dwell on it, you ask people to hold you accountable to it, you basically try to magnify the godly guy in your thing, and you wait for God to wake you up. And we're waiting on God's sermon. You know, a year later, God woke me up and said, hey, Bill, you know, you asked a year ago, I didn't tell you the story about the number of guys who were convinced Jill was going to marry them. I prayed that she would go for a year without, Psalm 27:15 says, I would have fainted unless I believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and strengthen your heart. Wait upon the Lord. So while I was waiting, I prayed that Jill would go for a year without anybody falling in love with her or saying that, you know, they were convinced that it was God's will for them to marry her. And I just kind of forgot about it. You know, there's a sister, and, you know, that was it. And then, you know, a year later, I realized, oh, it's a year. And, you know, I kind of scanned my bank, blank, there's nothing there. And then that was one of the pieces of the story, saying, okay, maybe you should start considering about this now. So, you know, you just put the desire to sleep. God will bring the desire back if you're seeking his will. And then what's your responsibility to search for him or her? I think your safest course of action is to trust that he will find you. Next week I'll talk about the guy searching. They really have a responsibility. If you want that dynamic, I know of a relationship where it's a really horrible relationship. The guy, you know, is a Christian or kind of was, and is married to this woman who hates his religion, his parents, and everyone who's involved with the religion. He's married to her. And the way it got started is she went up and gave him her number on the bus. Thought it was cute. He gave him my number. He called the number. I'm like an ox led to slaughter. You know, he's just sacrificed all of his spiritual future. And I'm sure, this, you know, she's you know, the facade has fallen off. And, well, we knew her, she was a witch. So, you know, he's miserable. So we'll talk about the searching part for guys, but I think for gals, weight, it's really a good course of action. What about a meat market? Tuesday night, outside of Cherry Hill, New Jersey, a place called Shop and Pack. 2,000 singles wearing name tags do their shopping. They check out each other when they're checking out the tomatoes. It's not that far away. You can hire a van. You can go.
So what do you think of things like eHarmony? Like, I've never done it, but I cannot tell you how many people tell me females have passed their own. Like, hundreds of people said it.
I think, okay, I think it's worth being involved. I don't think it should be in your glass case. I think you need to be out living the Christian life. I think there are, you know, you need to figure out if it's God's will for you to be doing whatever you're doing. You know, there are Christian conferences. There's a thing at Greenwood Hills next summer called Congress. And it's a great spot for people who believe sort of what we do to be, you know, exposed to each other and good Bible teaching and stuff like that. Misan, you were a real big fan of that, right? It's not where you found Steve, but, you know, it's good to at least there give guys hope. So, I mean, there are spots and things you can do, but there's this balance, and I think you should err on the side of waiting until you are in the position where God says, this is what you should do. And you're not going to hear God say, this is what you should do, unless you're seeking after God. You know, you cannot know the will of God unless you're following the objective will. And, you know, times down in Chinatown, people would come, and this is true of almost every evangelical church, people come and they want to get married, and they're sleeping together. And the response is, well, how, if you don't know God's objective will, it says don't sleep together, how can you know that you're supposed to be married to him? You can't know it. So, you know, you need to be following one. You know the objective, you follow the objective. He'll make this objective clear. That's what I can do on that one. This lunch is late. Last call. We'll talk more next week. I'm going to look at Sleeping Beauty, and actually a lot of these questions that we're answering related to Sleeping Beauty, and we'll revisit them. So let's pray. Thank you, Father in heaven, that you know what's best. You created it, and you let us experience it as we follow you. I pray for each of the singles here that they would put their desires on the altar, and then they would experience that good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. I pray in the process you would transform them, you would give them hope, you would give them grace, you would give them all that they need to wait for the perfect fulfillment of your plan. Thank you that as we wait, you are all that we need. Pray, bless our time and our fellowship. Thanks for our food. In Christ's name, amen.